So this text is getting more advanced. It's a little difficult text. In fact, I myself have difficulty understanding and expressing it, so I'll try my best. But actually, this is probably the most difficult text I have covered. But most of you have been coming for a few years, so I think it's worthwhile that we need to move on. Otherwise, you are just stuck in the old ideas. So that's why we have taken this particular text. It helps me to learn too. I also, because having to prepare, I have to understand it myself. So after talking about the three paths of service, bhakti, love for God, and the pranayama, breathing, and yoga, now he talks about the path of knowledge. And the first thing he said was, the mind is unreal. We had talked about that last time. Not unreal, but an illusion. And we had defined three states, real, unreal, and illusion. For those of you who don't remember, it may be worthwhile to listen to the website, you know, firstpower.info, where Tony has been putting the talk, so it helps you to revise. So real is that which is the same in past, present, future, waking, dream, deep sleep, old age, youth, young age. That which is constant, permanent, unchanging is real. And that, of course, is the Om, the consciousness, God, which is always there. Past, present, all was there before time and all that. Then what is unreal? Unreal is that which never existed, like the horns on my head, you know, doesn't exist. So that is unreal. Anything that does not exist, never existed, is unreal. And what is an illusion? Illusion is a temporary appearance. It was there and then it disappeared, or was not there, then it stayed for a while and went away. We call that an appearance, we call that an illusion, a temporary appearance, and that's what the mind is. It's like this building was not there 10 years ago. It was built and then it's now here, and maybe in a few years we may expand it, break it, make it bigger. So that which is changing, that which was not there, is there, and then will not be in the future, is called an appearance or an illusion. And that is what we said. The mind is not always present. The mind is sometimes there in the waking, in the dream it is active. In deep sleep, mind is absent. Also, mind is changing, sometimes angry, sometimes happy, sometimes sad, sometimes agitated, sometimes peaceful. So that which is changing and appearing and disappearing, we call it as an appearance, as an illusion. It's not real. It's not permanent. It is temporary appearance. So everything that is an appearance needs a substratum, needs a support. Like the rope and the snake example, you all know that you see in the darkness, you don't see a rope. Very clearly, you project a snake upon it. So the snake is an appearance because you think it is a snake, but actually it is a rope. Because you don't know the rope as a rope, you project a snake. But if there was nothing there, there was no rope, then would you project a snake? No, you would just walk on. But seeing something that looks like a snake, which is a rope, you project a snake. So the rope is the substratum. The snake is the illusion. Snake is the appearance. So if the mind is an appearance, then what is the support of the mind? What is the substratum? Where does the mind appear? How does the mind appear? As I said, it needs somewhat thinking. But the more this book becomes clear, the meditation will go deeper. Because then you will really know what you are meditating on. So studying this text will help us. So we'll do verse number 18. I think page 52. Verse 18. Vrittayastvaham vrittimashritaha. Vrittayastvaham vrittimashritaha. Vrittayo mano vidyaham manaha. Vrittayo mano vidyaham manaha. So vrittaya means thoughts. Vritti means thoughts. Aham vrittim ashrita. It depends on the I thought. All thoughts depend on the I thought. We'll explain that little more. And where are the thoughts? Thoughts are in the mind, right? Thoughts are exist in the mind. Vrittaya mana. Therefore, I thought is the mind. That is what Raman Maharishi says. It's very obtuse, very difficult to understand that all thoughts depend on the I thought. And thoughts are in the mind. Therefore, mind is the I thought. That's what is translated. So I'll try to explain it. So how do we say I thought is the mind? That is the goal of our talk today. And like I said, if it is not clear, even for me, initial reading was not clear. So repeated reading will help. So read, go home and read this text. Listen to the talk again on First Power. Go to firstpower.info. That will help. So what is mind? Mind is a flow of thoughts. Just as a river is a flow of water, if there is no flow of water, if there is stationary water, we don't call it a river, we call it a lake or a pond. What is a river? River is a flow of water. If the water dries up, then we say there is no river. Like there used to be a Kern River, now the water is dried up. So we don't say that. So similarly, when there is no flow of thoughts, there is no mind. When there is thoughts flowing, then there is the mind. When the thoughts become completely still, there is no thought. That's why in deep sleep, we say the mind is non-existent. It is absent. When you wake up or when you're dreaming, then the mind is active. But in deep sleep, the mind is absent. Also, when you go into deep meditation, samadhi, like these great yogis, when they go into deep meditation, then the mind in that becomes completely still. And that stillness of the mind, in that stillness, the mind is absent. And that's where they experience the self. The self can only be experienced when the mind is still. So that's why they say, for this knowledge, a subtle and a calm mind is required. If my mind is agitated, if my mind is disturbed, if I'm angry, if I'm, you know, jealous, if I'm unhappy, then this knowledge is very difficult. You have to have a calm mind. You sit down, you know, early in the morning, and when your mind is relaxed, you know, when you don't have too many other things. And then also the mind has to be made subtle. Subtle means, right now our mind is very gross, you know, gross. It thinks of the objects, things. But to think of the cause of that, to go beyond the what is visible to us, is called a subtle mind. That which mind which goes beyond what is simply known to us, what I see, hear, smell, taste, that everybody knows. But to know what is the cause of all this, where is the support of all this, that is called a subtle mind. Now, what happens when I study? Like I study this text. Okay, in a few weeks you'll finish the text. You say, finished, khatam ho gaya. I've finished the book. Or you say, I have finished so many books. I have read so many books. I have read Buddhism. I have read Chinese philosophy, Confucianism, and I have read the German philosophy. So what that does is that knowledge should reduce the ego, should not increase the ego. But what we find, that the more knowledge I have, the ego gets fatter. It's like a broomstick. You know, there's a broomstick. Now, on the broomstick, you put colored feathers, you put golden thread, you put all beautiful things. Will it change? The broomstick will remain a broomstick. Its function is to clean the floor. So similarly, the ego loves decoration. Oh, I know so many books. I have read, attended so many lectures. I have studied so much film. Studying should reduce your ego, should make you more humble, because when you start studying, you realize how much you don't know. Like, you know, I have been teaching this class for more than 10 years, but I still find that every time I do something new, I learn, and that makes me realize how little I know. So that is what we should do, that knowledge should reduce the ego, should not increase the ego. Now let us analyze what is a thought. Thought is always of an object, right? So like it could be of one object, it could be of many objects. Like I could be looking at this chair, so that is one object. Or I am looking at all of you, so there are multiple objects, plus pictures, plus fan, plus light. So the thought is one, multiple objects or one object. Even if I'm looking at only one object, say I'm looking at, you know, BJ, but then in that object I'm seeing many things. What is her height? What is her appearance? What clothes she's wearing? Is there a spot on her nose? So even when I'm looking at one object, there are multiple thoughts, right? What she's wearing, what she looks like, is she tired, is she happy? So that's why the thought is always of objects. It can be one object or it can be multiple objects. So that is clear, right? Thought is always of an object. But they say sometimes the mind becomes completely still. That's called objectless awareness. Like this hall is full of all these chairs, pictures, fan and everything. Suppose you remove everything, all the objects, all the people, and the hall is empty. Then you say, what do you see? You only see the hall. That time you don't see any objects. So that is called objectless awareness, where the hall awareness is there. In that hall, there is no objects. But still that hall is there, right? Even though it's an empty hall. And even when the mind say, oh, my mind became still, I was not thinking of anything. But the mind is aware of nothingness, right? I'm not thinking of anything. At this moment, my mind is still. So even though as long as the mind is there, there will be objects. It may be objectless, that your mind is at this moment completely still. Like in meditation or when you do prayers or sometime when you suddenly get shocked and your mind becomes blank. Oh, I have nothing to think of. And the mind at that moment is objectless. So what happens is that the mind keeps running from one thought to another thought. That's why when we sit in meditation, you know, I should be thinking of God or thinking of the self, the Lord's presence within. And I'm thinking of my family, my work, you know, where am I going to go after meditation? Who am I going to meet? So they say mind should become single pointed. So from many thoughts, that's why in meditation, we start by relaxing your body, observing your breath, and you chant the mantra. So the idea is that from many thoughts, you bring it to one thought, and that is the sound of the mantra, Om or Soham or Hari Om or whatever. And then ultimately, in that silence, even the thought goes away and the person becomes still. But just having one thought is not enough. Like say, I have a thought of this cup, this glass. I say, this is cup, 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 cup. I go on saying that. But that's not removing my ignorance of the cup. I say, okay, this cup, what is it made of? Steel. What is steel made of? Steel is a mixture of iron and nickel and, you know, all those things. And where did it come from? The ground. What is the shape? It is round. What is the function of the cup? You know, I can use it to drink water. So just knowing a cup is okay. But when I know the details of the cup, of inquire into the details of the cup, then only my inquiry is complete. So similarly, people say, I know God or I don't know God. That is not enough. You know, say, I know God. No, you must know who is God, where is God, what does he do, what is his nature, what are his qualities. And when you inquire, you find out God is everywhere. He's all-knowing, he's all-merciful, he's kind. He's the one who created this universe. All my actions are known to that Lord within, and I get the result of the actions because of God. So once you inquire, then you know who God is or what he is. Otherwise you say, I know God. It's not enough. You need to inquire. So that's why they say inquiry is necessary. And that is the difference between animal and man. Ahar, Nidra, Bhaya, Maithun. These are common in animal and man. Ahar means food. You know, animals eat, men also eat. There's no difference. Nidra, sleep. We sleep, animals sleep. No difference. Bhaya, fear. Fear we have and they have. They have fear of any other animals. We have fear of old age, fear of getting poor, fear of losing my money, fear of losing my job. So that is also common. And Maithun, procreation. That also is common between humans and animals. So all those four, food, sleep, fear and procreation, are common. What is the difference between man and human and animal is inquiry. Inquiry with the right knowledge. So inquiry is what distinguishes man from animals. Otherwise, there is no difference. So when we use the intellect, which God has given us, and we inquire with the right knowledge, then only I can consider myself superior to animals. Otherwise, just to have a life, have, you know, family and children, and buy a house and then earn money and then die. Even animals do that. Even a sparrow, you know, two sparrows meet, they build a nest, you know, they procreate, they have little baby sparrows, they teach them to fly, and then they die. Then what is the difference between a sparrow and me? The only difference between a sparrow and me is if I can apply my intellect to inquire into who I am and what is the origin of this universe. If I don't do that, then my life is not any better than a sparrow's life. So let us inquire into the nature of the thought. But as I said, knowledge should not lead to ego, because ego is always a problem. Talking about ego, talking about God, there was this woman and she asked her friend, "Why did you get divorced?" She says, "We divorced on religious grounds." So she says, "Religious grounds? What do you mean? Are you Protestant and he's Catholic?" She said, No. "We divorced on religious grounds." So she said, "What do you mean religious grounds?" She said, "Oh, he thought he was God." You know? So that is what happens to us. You know, we get ego. So that's why they say you must have right knowledge without ego. And in any thought, there are two components, aham and idam, I and this. I and this, everything else is called this, idam. So this door, this fan, this lady, this picture, this wall, this chair, and I plus this. For you are I, and all the rest of us are this man, this woman, this speaker, this mic. So aham and idam is there in every action, in every thought, right? There has to be aham and idam, I and this. So I and this is there in every thought. Everywhere it says I. So this, but who is this I? They say I is the perceiver, feeler and thinker, this ego. And the objects, emotions and thoughts are this. So like in the mind, there is this joy, this sorrow, this anger, this hatred. For the intellect, it is this knowledge, this information. But even the body, mind and intellect are not aham. They are idam. They are this. You say, "Oh, I am this body, mind and intellect." No, we say even the body, mind and intellect is known to me. Like you said, this body. This body is getting old. When I say this body is getting old, that means this body also is this. So I am the knower of this body. This mind of mine. Oh, it's getting upset. I'm getting stressed out. So mind is this. And this intellect, I don't understand. Why is my intellect so confused? So everything is this. Aham is me. And what is that aham? Aham is which we will study in the next few weeks. So they say for any thought to arise, the I thought is necessary. For me to see all of you, I have to be present in any thought. I thought is there. Like you say, I see all of you. So that means I am there and I see all of you. So I and all of you is the idam. So I has to be there. But you say, well, I is not there. Like you say, today is Thursday. Where is the I thought? Today is Thursday. There is no I thought. They say no. I know that today is Thursday. So that's why I has to be there. You say it is hot. Where is the I thought? I know it is hot. So I thought is necessary for all thoughts. The objects may keep on changing. Like I may see a person. I may see a picture. I may see a wall. I may see a fan. The objects keep on changing, but I is constant. I am constant. I is constant. And when does the I thought arise? When I am awake. When I am in deep sleep, is there an I thought? Am I aware of myself? No, I am not aware of myself. I am not aware of anything. The moment I wake up, the The moment I wake up, then it becomes I am, I exist, I am functioning. And when I am, when I wake up, then the whole world appears. In deep sleep, there is no world. Deep, whether it's a poor man, a rich man, a woman, a man, a child, an old person, all of them have the same absence of thought. But as soon as they wake up, then, you know, the rich businessman starts his business, the poor man, you know, he works in the fields, the robber starts robbing the people, the saint goes and preaches. So in deep sleep, there is no saint, there is no robber, there is no poor, no rich, no man, no woman, no young or old. But as soon as I wake up, then the mind becomes functional. Then the mind starts thinking and the mind starts getting the knowledge, getting all these thoughts. Therefore, they say, when I am there, the mind is there. When I am not there, the mind is non-existent. Right? Like last week we had said, the presence and absence theory, that when the child is there in the house and then everything is broken, next day you can find everything is broken, that boy is very destructive, creating a mess. But suppose the boy goes away for 10 days to his grandfather's house, and you go for 10 days, the house is clean, spick and span, nothing is broken. Why? Because that boy is missing. As soon as the boy comes back after 10 days, again things start breaking. So then you assume that the boy is the source of problem. As long as the boy is not there, everything is fine. So similarly, the mind is the cause of my problems, because the mind is the one that's giving me joy, sorrow, anger, hatred, greed, jealousy. And when does the mind arise? When I wake up. When I'm asleep, in deep sleep, there is no mind. And by that time, I'm very peaceful. Not only when I'm deeply asleep, not only I'm peaceful, but the world around is peaceful too, because I'm not disturbing others. So that's why they say that to become more peaceful, you have to go to the source of the mind, and that is the I thought. I, and which I, who is this I? We will talk in 2 weeks. We'll be discussing in 2 weeks. It's a little difficult subject, and I understand it's not very, at this heat, it's not very easy to understand and to concentrate. But the more you think about it, what this will do is take us deeper. And that is the whole idea with this text, is to go deeper into who am I. Unless you discover who you are, and unless you learn what is the source of the mind will always create problems. And that's why in meditation, we go deeper within, find the support of the mind, which is the I, the true I. And when you reach that, then only you reach true peace, true silence, true happiness. Because we are all looking for that. We are looking for happiness. We are looking for peace. We are looking for relief from stress. As long as the mind is bothering us, we will continue to have all those. So this book takes us to the source of the mind, the origin of the mind. And that's how we can go beyond it. I know it's a little difficult subject. I tried my best, because this text is hard, but I think if you are patient, these ideas will be repeated in the next few weeks. So, you know, be patient, read this again at home and think about it, and hopefully these ideas will become more clear. Any questions, any comments?
So the I is necessary for human existence.
Yes. The I thought is necessary for me to function, obviously. Yes, because if I am not there, like a person who is, whose mind is gone, say who is, you know, who is living in a lunatic asylum where his thinking is deranged. Now, his whole idea of himself is all wrong. So when his idea of himself is wrong, then his idea of the world is wrong too. So I is necessary for to be aware of the world. Soon as I wake up, first I realize I am. And once I know I am, then I can say the chair and the pot and I see my family, my work, you know, everything else arises only after the I thought. So we have to go to the focus of the I thought. Where does the I thought arise? And is the I thought real or unreal? And that is what we'll be covering in the next few weeks. So this I thought, and who am I really? Am I this man or woman? Am I this young or old? Am I short or tall? Or am I something different? That is the focus of this text.
But the ego, as in psychodynamics, psychology,
right,
is more an essential part of
it. Yes, yes. No, you're very right. The ego is used different in psychiatry,
right,
and differently in Vedanta. When in Vedanta, we say ego is the perceiver, feeler and thinker, the I. That I am a perceiver, feeler and thinker. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. Who? This perceiver, feeler and thinker. So that the ego is the one that is perceiving, feeling and thinking. That is the ego. Now the ego is necessary to function. But the problem with the ego is a lot of things, a lot of problems. Having an ego is to function is okay. But the problem with the ego is one of the things the ego does is separates me from others. I'm a male, so I'm different from all the females. And then I'm an Indian, so I'm different from non-Indians. I'm different from whites, from Hispanics. So then, you know, I'm happy or I'm unhappy, I'm stressed. So the ego is getting, then also I'm getting old and I get worried. You know, I'm getting sick, I need to go to the doctor. So this ego is the source of difficulty when it is not understood. When it is understood as what is the true nature of the ego is a temporary appearance upon the consciousness. When I understand that I am this consciousness, and this ego is a role that I am playing at this moment. My name is Anil, I'm a doctor, I'm a male, all those things are roles that I am playing. So the ego is a role, ego is a job, ego is a designation where I am at this moment. That is who I am, who I think myself to be. But at the bottom of my understanding, there should be a clear understanding that this ego is a role I am playing. My name is a name given to me by my parents. The nationality is where I was born. You know, male or female is, you know, what sex I was born with. And doctor, engineer, lawyer is, again, those are all qualifications that I acquired. But the underneath all is the substratum, the consciousness, the Brahman, which is one. So as long as I understand that, then I can function in the world and do my duty. Because then what happens is I see the oneness. When I see the substratum, the consciousness, the Brahman, and I say I am consciousness, she is, he is, she is. Everything is that one consciousness, even the chair, even the walls. Everything is that one Lord appearing in different names and forms. So the ego can separate me, but right knowledge can unite. And that's what these Mahatmas, they see the oneness. That's why Mahatma Gandhi could see even among the Harijans, you know, the Lord's presence, even among the low caste. He said, he called them Harijans. They are children of God. That's why Jesus said, love thy neighbor, irrespective of who thy neighbor was. So these saints do not have an ego. They see the one consciousness. And that's what Vedanta teaches us, that the ego is a role you are playing, but be always aware that you are this consciousness. It's like, you know, Dilip Kumar is acting in a movie or Charlton Heston is acting in a movie. Now in the movie, he's playing the role of a king, but he knows I am an actor and I'm playing the role of a king. And he performs the role so beautifully that he wins an Oscar or he wins another awards. But when he goes home, he takes off his king's outfit, and then he realizes I'm no longer a king, I'm an ordinary individual. But suppose he says, no, I am now added to the king role, I am a king. So he puts on his king's clothes and goes home and tells his wife, I'm a king, you know, bring me my shoes. The wife will bring him the shoes, but probably on his head. Why? Because because he has forgotten who he is and starts thinking. That's what happened to that actor, right? In Batman, the Joker.
Yeah.
The actor who was acting as Joker. Huh? What was his name? In Batman, he became so addicted to that role that he used to wear that Joker outfit and go in the subway, go in the car, go home. Everywhere he used to wear, and he actually became crazy later on. He got hooked on drugs and he died of drug overdose. So the problem is that we play a role, but we get so attached to the role that we forget. And I'm so attached to this role of Anil, and then I forget I am this consciousness. And then that's when the problem arises. So ego is ignorance of who I am. That's when the ego arises. So forgetting who I am. So you play the role, but inside you know. That's why they say outside drama and inside drama. Inside God and outside you play the role, whatever role you have been assigned. So that is the definition of ego. That is my temporary role that has been assigned to me, but I am actually the consciousness. And that understanding will then remove the ego. Not only will remove the ego, will make me see the oneness. So is that, I hope.
That is helpful.
Yeah. So that's why the real understanding of ego, that's why ego is called ahamkar. Aham means I. Ahamkar. I am the doer. Kar means the doer. I am the doer. That is the ego. But you understand that I am the consciousness and this body is the doer. This body is functioning. Even the Gita, Krishna says that a wise person knows that everything is happening, but I am the consciousness. And then he does not get deluded, does not get affected. Otherwise, if I think I am the doer, I did so good and then nobody appreciated me, you know, I helped so many. The guy didn't even say thanks and didn't even give me a cup of tea. I worked so hard. But then what happens? Then you get disappointed. You say, the Lord functioned, you know, through me. And whatever was meant to happen, happened. If people appreciate or doesn't appreciate, doesn't matter. Because I am not the doer. You know, so the ego will get reduced when you turn your attention to the consciousness. So that is the idea of ego. And that's how you reduce the ego, by reducing the doership. I am not the doer, the Lord is functioning through me. Lord is in the Lord's presence, this body, mind, intellect are functioning. So I am an instrument for that. But that's a good question. Thank you for asking. Anything else? I know this subject is difficult, so we won't have too much attendance, but it's all right. At least I get to read. And whoever shows up, you know, helps me. Anyway, next week, there won't be a class here, as we have sent you the email. Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission, will be here 4 days. We'll be speaking Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. From 6:30 to 7 will be some chanting and some bhajan singing. And then 7 to 8:30 he will be talking. So come at 6:30 every day, Wednesday to Saturday. And you can attend, listen to the bhajans, the chanting. And then listen to his talk from 7 to 8:30. So you have, everybody has the flyer, right? If anybody has not got, please let me know. I can get it to you. Also, on Wet Thursday, which is our meditation day, he is arranged to meet with us. Only the meditation group, our meditation group, will meet with him in a small group from 5:30 to 6. And if you have any questions about this text or about meditation or anything, feel free to ask him. And he will be available to talk. And so we can ask him these same questions about I thought and, you know, mind is not real and all that. We can ask him to clarify. I'm sure he'll do a better job than I can. So Thursday from 5:30 to 6, we'll meet with him in a small group, just our meditation group. And then 6 to 6:30, you can just hang around, you know, and then 6:30 onward, the program will start. So come on next Thursday at 5:30, or before 5:30, around 5:15 to meet with him. And other days, come at 6:30. Also, if you wish to welcome him, he will be arriving at the mission on Wednesday, next Wednesday at 11 o'clock. If you're free, if you're not working, come here at 11 on Wednesday. You can welcome him. We would like to have a good crowd to welcome him. And then the Saturday morning, Saturday evening is the lecture. Saturday morning from 10 to 12, we are doing a special program to honor Swami Chinmayananda, who is the founder of our mission. From 10 to 12, there will be some prayers offered to him, Paduka Puja. and then we'll be chanting his name, and then people will talk about their experiences with Gurudev. Suppose somebody has met him or listened to him, how it has changed their life. So there'll be a special program Saturday 10 to 12, because it is 100 years ago that in 2016 May that Swami Chinmayananda was born. So next year May will be his 100th year. So we are celebrating a centenary year by remembering our guru, our founder. So that will be Saturday from 10 to 12. If you wish to participate in the puja, you can do that. You can check with me afterwards. I'll let you know how to. So you can actually offer puja to his padukas, to his feet, and then also listen to his stories and all that about him. So that will be Saturday from 10 to 12. So any questions about the program? Is that all clear? Please keep checking your emails.
He's going to be here at 11.
This Wednesday.
Here?
No, airport, he will arrive at 10:45 or 11, but we'll bring him here at 11:15. So be here by 11 on Wednesday, and we'll receive him here. From the airport, a couple of us will go pick him up, but he will be in the mission here, reaching around 11 or 11:15 on Wednesday. So be here at 11, and then we get to meet him. Then he will address the children, and then we'll have lunch. So it's good if we welcome him. So Wednesday, yes. So if you are recording, you can come here, record his talks, all the 4 days. Wednesday morning, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 4 evenings. And then they'll be doing some video recordings also. So we'll have audio and video both. Right. He's a very good speaker, very humorous, makes it very simple. Even the most difficult subject, he makes it very simple. So, and the reason I am doing this text, because we have done a lot of simple texts. Some of you have just started, but over the years we have done a lot of the simpler texts. So I thought, let's take something a little more advanced. I hope it's not too much. But main thing is that these ideas will be repeated again and again, even if it looks overwhelming. But the more you listen to it, the same idea gets repeated again and again. So it will become clearer. It is in this text itself, he will repeat these thoughts a few times.
It's not a thought process, but it makes you think more and deeply. And that's one thing I appreciate about this.
And like I said, the same idea of ego will be now covered in the next 5 to 6 weeks. So he will make this very clear. What is ego? Where does it arise? Why is it a problem? It all will be answered by the book itself in much more detail in the next 5 or 6 weeks. We should be able to go into more depth of that. So we'll meet in 2 weeks. 2 weeks is a Thursday. It will be July 2nd, which is a Thursday of a long weekend. I don't know how many will show up. If not too many show up, we may just make it like a discussion. What is meditation? What is your experience? 4th of July weekend, it's a Thursday evening. I'll be here if anybody shows up. If not, then we'll just cancel the class. But if you come, we'll have some. Either I'll prepare a text, or we can even just do a general discussion.